So the first one is awakening intuition and seeing God. It's referring to the book that we put out on Gurudeva's Spiritual Visions. If any of you haven't seen it, it has 14 short stories, some of them very short, and about Gurudeva's different visions, intuitions, and mystical experiences. Okay, so pique your interest. We're drawing on two of them today and talking about intuition in general. So the first one, it's a logical choice, has to do with Gurudeva's vision of God Shiva here. And the story begins, reading from the booklet. Gurudeva was in his room at Kauai's Hindu monastery in a state of deep sleep. He was in one of those profound states of slumber that are neither awake nor full of dreams, his conscious mind fully absent. In this clear space above physical consciousness, the 48-year-old Satguru experienced a threefold vision that would be the spiritual birth of the great Shiva citadel called Yerevan Temple and its surrounding Sangmarga Sanctuary. So, to quote Gurudeva, one early morning before dawn, a threefold vision of Lord Shiva came to me. First, I beheld Lord Shiva walking in a valley. So these are paintings by Manivale and are the basis for what the portrait, what the mural artist in Kerala will be using. But the quality he's going to come up with will be, you know, 10 times better than this, which is a very simple watercolor kind of style. One early morning before dawn, a threefold vision of Lord Shiva came to me. First, I beheld Lord Shiva walking in a valley. Then I saw his face peering into mine. Then he was seated on a large stone, his reddish golden hair flowing down his back. That was February 15, 1975. Upon re-entering earthly consciousness, I felt certain that the great stone was somewhere on our monastery land and set about to find it. Guided from within by my Satguru, I hired a bulldozer and instructed the driver to follow me as I walked to the north edge of the property that was then a tangle of buffalo grass and wild guava. So this was 1975, and the back part we had only purchased, I think, in 1973. It was totally overgrown. You couldn't even tell what was there. It was totally overgrown, primarily by wild guava trees. I hacked my way through the jungle southward as the bulldozer cut a path behind me. After almost half a mile, I sat down to rest near a small tree. Though there was no wind, suddenly the tree's leaves shimmered as if in the excitement of communication. I said to the tree, "What is your message?" In reply, my attention was directed to a spot just to the right of where I was sitting. When I pulled back the tall grass, there was a large rock, the self-created linga on which Lord Shiva had sat. A stunningly potent vibration was felt. The bulldozer's trail now led exactly to the sacred stone surrounded by five smaller boulders. Sanmarga, the straight path to God, had been created. An inner voice proclaimed, "This is the place where the world will come to pray." Sanmarga symbolizes each soul's journey to liberation through union with God. This was the fulfillment of the quest for a vision, what the future might hold, which led me and my followers to the lovely garden island of Kauai, held the most sacred of all by the Hawaiian peoples long, long ago. It is alongside the sacred Wailua River leading to the top of Mount Waialeale that this place of pilgrimage is being built, a temple of Kaivalya, granting freedom from the past and a vision for the future. The temple's 700-pound, 500 million years in the making crystal icon is a kalapaha, spiritual wish-fulfilling, ever-giving Shivalingam. So many blessings await each pilgrim, none is ever neglected. End of story. Sometimes we make lists of special qualities about Yerevan Temple, and always at the top of the list is this one, which is to have such a powerful vision of Lord Shiva as the initial impetus for a temple is one of Yerevan Temple's unique and important qualities. So only a few temples built in modern times have that. We're not unique, of course. The Flushing Ganesha Temple in New York is one we know about. The story is written up in the Ganesha book, in a very charming story. But there aren't very many. So if the deity comes, God Shiva comes, or another deity comes, and a temple is built upon that fact, it gives the temple a head start, is what I call it. Not that other temples are left out, it's just it has a certain amount of energy all at once to start with. Whereas usually you have to just build by daily pujas, slow by slow. This has a lot to start with and therefore has a head start. Similarly, Kadavul Temple had a vision of Murugan who came and with his veil. That's in the book as well. If you, any of you don't know that story, so Kadavul Temple has a head start as well. This is a nice story. Pilgrim came and talked to me in the Gurupitam. That's the normal pattern, is someone who's coming particularly for a few days, they go out and they worship and see Yerevan Temple and come back, and then before they leave they talk, find out what happened. And he said what impressed him was, you know, he'd been to many places in India where famous visions had taken place 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago or something. But here, it had taken place just in the last couple of decades. You know, this was a place where this type of experience was happening in modern times, and he felt that gave it a special quality. Oh, that's my sideways question. You like that? This is Pawani Swami's new graphic format. I couldn't possibly create it. He created it, and so I know enough about it to put in new type. So if it's a question, it'll look like that. Oh, does anyone have a... As I said, we're trying to go back and forth here and get some comments. Anything you learned from the story of Gurudeva's vision of God Shiva that you'd like to share?
In the picture, Shiva was portrayed as wearing a white gown.
Yes, this is what Gurudeva saw. I mean, Shiva can, of course, dress himself as he chooses. But that's my understanding, is it's supposed to be accurate of what he looked like. Yes?
A very strong conviction of Gurudeva and his intuition in his visions. Because I don't know if... My problem is if I was blessed with a vision, my first problem would be believing in my vision.
Is it imagination or is it vision, right? There's ways to tell.
Well, I think that anything Gurudeva touched had a head start.
Very true. Well, on the simple side, it shows that the visions of God Shiva in his personal form are possible. It's not something that won't happen. Shows you it's a possibility. We'll talk about that more later. Okay, you're warming up. That's good. Oh, this is my usual statement. Some of you have heard it 3 or 4 times. I'm sorry, but some of you haven't heard it, so at least it's not long. So, of course, if we took a survey and said how many here have seen God Shiva in that way, you know, we wouldn't get a large number. Yeah. So, obviously, it's a way that most of us don't experience God. So therefore, we have to be careful to think, oh, I can't experience God because I haven't had that experience. So the simplest way to have an experience of God Shiva or the other deities is in the temple and through the murti, you know, particularly after a special puja. Those of you who aren't used to that practice, such as the Nataraja special puja this morning, you feel an energy coming out, an uplifting energy coming out through the murti. And if you go outside, you come back in, you can definitely feel it. Even if you don't attend the puja, you can come afterwards and you can feel it. It's tangible. There's a certain energy there, particularly on a special day, such as this morning for the Nataraja. That's why we have to call that experiencing the deity. It's the deity as sanijam or radiance. And if we're attending the puja, then it's easiest to feel that right at the high point. And that particular puja this morning is two high points. Sometimes the first one is stronger than the second one. First one is when the curtain opens and the different lamps are being passed. That can be actually stronger. The high point is supposed to be the end. Don't ask me why. The one in the middle can be stronger, but sometimes it seems that way. So anyway, in this morning's puja, there's two high points, and that's when it's easiest to experience the deity as spiritual energy. And the analogy, which works well here in Hawaii, and even more so in Malaysia, it's very hot in Malaysia. If we go outside on a sunny day, close our eyes, we can feel the sun's rays. And if I were to ask you, are you experiencing the sun, and you had your eyes closed, you'd all say yes, right? No one would say, I'm not experiencing the sun, my eyes are closed. No, we'd say we're experiencing the sun. How are we experiencing the sun? We can feel it. We can feel the energy, the heat, the light. We can feel it on our skin, even though our eyes are closed. So it's the same in the temple. Our spiritual eye, it's not actually closed, but we don't know how to use it. Most of us don't know how to use it. So it's the same as being closed. But there's a spiritual energy that's radiating out from murti in the same way. So we need to learn how to feel that energy just as tangibly as we feel the energy from the sun. And in that way, it's the easiest way to experience the deity. So Gurudeva describes this. What is this shakti? Meaning the energy. It is being in the presence of divinity. All holy men and women emanate all of these shaktis, and you can too, some stronger than others. Shakti is divine radiation from the third world, causal plane, through the second world, astral plane, into the first, physical plane. The astral body is in the second world and lives inside the physical body. It's through the astral body that shakti is felt. So it's not the physical body that feels it. It's our astral or subtle body that is feeling this energy. So we had an interesting experience in Kotobol in 1973. Sorry, in 1985. We had a re-consecration ceremony. So it's called Kumbhabhishekam. Either the first time you do it, the second time you do it. Every time you do it, it's called Kumbhabhishekam. But if you're doing it, not the initial time, but any subsequent 12-year time, it's actually a re-consecration. The temple's already functioning. Quite often is done when there's major construction going on. So in this case, the priest took the pots, the kumbhas, managed to put the energy of the three deities in the three separate kumbhas, took them out and put them under the banyan tree there. So the most amazing thing happened. The temple, which felt very sacred, all of a sudden lost its sense of sacredness. Felt like a garage, a warehouse. Felt totally void of spiritual energy. Imagine the priest had managed to take all the spirituality out of the temple, put it under the tree. Fortunately, he didn't spill any. I didn't kick it over or anything. We brought it back successfully a few days later, put it back in. Gurudeva didn't like it and said, we're not going to do that again because the energy is so strong. I mean, it can be very upsetting when you do that with it. being a Shiva temple. So we haven't done it since. But it can, you know, it impressed my mind. There it was, a sacred temple. There it was, an ordinary warehouse, and there it was, a sacred temple. A few days later, it impressed my mind, you know, exactly what the energy in the temple felt like, because it went away. It totally went away. Okay, let's just say, any experience to share of the deity Shakti? Okay. Anyone care to share an experience of feeling the energy of the deity?
Well, yes, Peter. The last time I was here, I went to Ardmorga Pujas, and the last one was very intense and with energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I went home, and when I was sat in front of my Lord, I felt that same energy that I had sitting there for 2 weeks.
Mm.
And then when I came back today,
mm-hmm,
and went in there, I felt it again.
Mm-hmm.
Very intense.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's it. That's it.
Sometimes he's there and very present, and it's a very powerful energy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm busy
somewhere else. Yeah. Well, yes, both of you are quite right in that experience. Yes. Yes.
I paraphrased something that was quoted in Taka a few weeks ago. I feel like sometimes I feel like I disappear for a bit.
Mm.
And I hear it's like this nebulous zone. It's a very safe place.
Mm. That's the inner you. It should be safe. It's actually you. You see, but you're in a dangerous place now. You're in the outer you. Yeah. See how we look at it backwards. We tend to identify with the outer us going within rather than the inner us coming out. So that's what we want to work with to turn around. That was in the Shum. Remember the Shum description this morning? Where David said, you're inside, you are the energy, and then you open up your eyes and you look out. Okay, well, that got some good responses. That's about all the time we have. Okay, we have another story, story 7. This is from Phoenix. So Gurudeva was in Phoenix. This is somewhere 1950s. Probably what, 54, maybe 52, somewhere around there. Because Gurudeva started teaching when he was 30 in San Francisco. So this had to happen 2 to 4 years before that, and that was 1957. He says, while I was waiting in Phoenix, deciding whether to open my organization there, I had another experience one day while driving my small car. My inner self told my outer self, look at that sign, meaning the street sign. If any of you have been to Phoenix, you know that it's totally a flat area, absolutely flat. There I was driving around this big flat area where there were lots of houses and homes. Look at that sign, remember the sign. It was Spruce Street. I took note of the sign. Then I said, okay, I'm just going to get into my inner self. Inner self said, drive 20 blocks forward, turn left, drive 10 blocks, turn right, and drive 5 blocks, turn left, 2 blocks, turn around, back up, go 10 blocks, and on like that for about 2 hours as I followed the instructions. Then it said, stop and look at the sign. What do you think it said? I was a believer in myself. An absolute believer in myself. So, any comments on that story? Oh, that's a good point. Spruce Street, yes. Okay. Oh, this is, that's Yoga Swami, slap on the back illustration. So there's 4 chapters on Gurudeva meeting Yogaswami in Japanese Sri Lanka in 1949. So I have a chance to speak to a number of Yoga Swami groups in the West. The largest group is in Toronto. It's actually three or four groups. They prefer to have multiple groups, shall we say. There's a very large single group in Sydney. I've talked to there, and well, there's smaller groups in London and other places. So usually the talk tells some Yoga Swami stories to try and relate, and talks about Yoga Swami being a great yogi, sitting for hours, and when he was younger, he'd even sit for days in deepest meditation. He'd sit for a couple of days and then get up, walk around, get the legs going again. That's something to eat, come back and sit down for a few days. So it's easy, of course, talking to the group, everyone says, oh yes, Yoga Swami, and you know, you can see, here we are down here, there's a big pedestal, and Yoga Swami's up on the top, right? So what's wrong with that? Well, it's missing the point. It's Yoga Swami's high spiritual attainments are also our potential, the spiritual destiny of each soul, to be reached at some point in this or future life. So that's the point that's not obvious when I started, is we're talking about Gurudeva's visions as well. We're not trying to say, oh, Gurudeva's great, you know, and put him way up there and be down here. You know, we do that in a sense, but we're also wanting to acknowledge that that's our potential. We can also have that experience. Maybe not in this life, but in a future life. We can have the same experience because the soul's pattern of unfoldment is the same for every individual. It's not different. One soul isn't, you know, an orange tree kind of soul, another soul, an apple tree kind of soul, or something, you know. The human soul is the same. We have the same potential. So if anyone has a vision in experience, we have the potential to have that in this or future life. That's Ramana Maharshi there. They sat, Yoga Swami went there to the ashram, Tiruvannamalai. They sat in silence, I forget how many hours. Neither one said anything. That was their communication. What's there to talk about? So Gurudeva makes this point in Clear White Light chapter, Emerging with Shiva. Occasionally, it's a Balinese artist. Isn't his style interesting? If you're interested in art, you're unique. Occasionally, in a cross-section of the inner mind, when light merges into transcendental form, in other words, you have light which is higher than transcendental form. So when you're coming out, you could come from light into transcendental forms. The young aspirant may view the golden actinic face of a master peering into his, kindly and all-knowing. He is looking at his own great potential. Nicely said. In Bali, the first son is called, gets named Iwayan. So if you say Iwayan, you know, one-third of the group of men would be called Iwayan. To use another name. He's Iwayan, that artist. So that's what we want to keep in mind, that the visions, intuitions, and other mystical experience of Gurudeva are something you can eventually experience. In holding this perspective, reading about Gurudeva's experiences gives added motivation to your own spiritual striving. Okay, that's an interesting question. How to impress the mind that these experiences will be ours? Any suggestions how to break out of that natural putting the guru up on the pedestal and ourselves down here? How can we break out of that and think about having the experience ourselves? Any idea? Yes?
Come here and listen to you.
Okay, that's a good one, yes. Regular meditation, yes.
Affirmation,
absolutely.
I feel when I'm reading the Master Course, I'm doing Darshan every time I get that into the day, it's moving me.
Yes, well, if you read it in the right spirit, that's what happens. The books aren't simply books, they're connected to Gurudeva. He has the ability to connect to the books he wrote. in a deliberate way. Yes?
Bringing teachings to close to life, applying them.
Applying the teachings, yes, that's a very good point. Okay, that was the most answers we had. Okay, so we're building vocabulary here. Gurudeva says he's getting instructions from his inner self. We can also call the inner self in Gurudeva's teachings intuition, superconsciousness, and the inner voice. They're all synonymous terms. The musical instruments are actually inner sounds. That's what Gurudeva is saying. Instruments to duplicate these inner sounds. Well, I might as well read it, the whole thing. The sounds of the atomic structure of his nervous system, his cells, register as voices singing, the vina or sitar, tambura or symphonies of music. Instruments to duplicate these sounds for the outer ears were carefully tooled by the rishis of classical yoga thousands of years ago, including the mridanga or tabla and the flute. He will hear the shrill note likened to a nightingale singing as psychic centers in his cranium burst open, and then an inner voice indicating to his external consciousness, like a breath of air, direction, elucidation. Well, there's a chapter, for those who are interested, chapter 28, Emerging with Shiva, is all about this. Okay, intuition day by day occurs spasmodically, but it does occur. And systematically, one can gear his observation of his own intuitional faculties, find out exactly when these intuitive functions occur within him. It is a well-defined fact that we have the faculty of precognition of coming events. It is also concurrently known that feelings of fear may precede impending danger. It is for the individual to disentangle and sort out within his own daily experiential pattern which is which. In this way, he becomes knowledgeable in the great university of his own mind as to what is a daily intuitive occurrence and what is not. So I like to use analogies. This one, again, some of you have heard. It's the idea of background music. Everything is a file these days, so we say we have to say we're listening to an audio file, right? At least I know that much. I don't know the name of the file. You can't say a radio, you can't say this, it's a file. So there's an audio file playing softly in the background, and the room is a bit noisy. So we're not able to hear the music, right? Quite obvious. The music is there, but the noise in the room is significant, so we can't hear it. So our mind is the same way. Usually our mind is noisy. We're thinking about different things. We're distracted by other people. So the quiet inner voice can be guiding us, but we don't hear it. So that's how we want to look at it. It's not something we have to turn on. It's not something that's not there. It's something we have to become better at hearing through quieting the mind. So even though we're normally distracted, certain situations break through. A mother and a small child, very powerful tie. So the child's outside, the mother's inside. The mother can sense that something, the child's about to hurt him or herself and go outside. It's just the nature of that tie. It's so strong. Intuition comes through. Well, how do you distinguish between a genuine intuition and what is not? That came up earlier, the idea of a vision. You know, how is it a vision or just a dream? So Gurudeva explains, he says, desires come through feeling, warmth of emotion, as do thoughts, schemes, ways of manipulating the media forces for one's own personal benefit or that of a loved one. This is contrary to the power of intuition, which runs cold. So normal thoughts are warm. They have an emotional component. This is cold. Like a computer was telling you something. A computer doesn't have any emotion. which is cold and is direct, like a bolt of lightning in the inner sky, or the subtle rainbow of an etheric aura which bypasses the processes of current thinking, giving answers before the question and solving problems before they have accrued.